Good morning. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large for Sunday, July 28th, 2013. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Kyle Kellums.
Support for KUAF comes from the University of Arkansas Bookstore, reminding everyone that August 3rd and 4th is Arkansas's tax-free weekend. The University of Arkansas Bookstore offers a selection of school supplies, textbooks, apparel, and more. Razorback apparel is also available at the Northwest Arkansas Mall and Pinnacle Hills Promenade in Rogers. uofastore.com for more information.
Ahead on this morning's edition of Weekend Ozarks at Large, yarn graffiti begins to decorate public statues, trees, and other area landmarks. Pianos and drums make music, and we celebrate the newest addition to the royal family with our Sunday morning montage.
But first, money. Some say it makes the world go round, and there was lots of money in the news this week. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis has more in this week's Week in Review.
Early in the week, Northwest Arkansas Regional Airport reported that it received a sizable grant from the U.S. Department of Transportation. Members of Arkansas's congressional delegation announced Tuesday that the airport had received $3.4 million through the grant. Kelly Johnson is the airport director of XNA. She says that while $2.5 million will be used to reimburse the airport for part of the costs of renovations to the concourse, the remainder of the grant will be used in a variety of ways.
We'll be using about $575,000 to add an extra two lanes of pavement to the ramp at the end of the north end of that concourse, so that will allow us to get larger aircraft around the end of the building for parking on the other side. In addition to that, there's $500,000 there for a master plan update. We haven't updated the airport's master plan since 2002. And last but not least is $183,000 for a sweeper truck that we need for all the extra pavement that we've added over the last several years.
Johnson says that grants from the federal government are imperative to performing necessary rehabilitation work at the airport.
We have to have that money to go ahead and do the things that we need to do at the airport. As everybody knows, we've built an alternate landing surface. We did that with the ARRA money and also discretionary money from the FAA, and now we're rehabbing the original runway with discretionary money from the FAA. Our entitlement money basically is just what it sounds like. It's money we're entitled to based on the number of boardings at the airport. So we can really program that money a little further out, which really allows us to do some good planning.
From planes, we move to buses. Though Ozark Regional Transit has been managed by a contracted company for the Transit Authority's modern history, that stands to change after this year. This week, the ORT Board of Directors voted to take management of the two-county transit provider in-house. Jerry Van Hoos, chairperson of the ORT Board, says that First Transit has managed the transit system effectively through a period of growth. But with First Transit's contract expiring at the end of the year, he says that now is an opportune time to take over managing the day-to-day operations of the transit system.
And we could save some money, even though we feel our money was really well spent with this other firm. They've done us a really good job. But we felt like we could move forward with the management team we have in place, and hopefully we can hire that person. And so we'll have about $150,000, $200,000 a year that we can put in providing more rides for our clients.
But buses need highways on which to drive, and earlier this week, the Arkansas Highway Transportation Department announced its schedule of the first 30 state road projects to be contracted using proceeds from the new half-cent sales tax. The first six projects to get underway are all in Northwest Arkansas. Danny Strasley with the Arkansas Highway Department says that three of those projects include improvements to Interstate 540. He says that those improvements will be paid for using various means. Federal money through the state's Transportation Improvement Program will fund construction of parts of the interstate improvements, and the state's Interstate Rehabilitation Program, a 2011 voter-approved bond program, will cover much of the interchange improvements between Fayetteville and Bentonville.
The half-cent sales tax projects will pretty much kind of connect those areas throughout the corridor that the other programs didn't address. And this is what we're doing throughout the state with these types of programs. We are connecting areas of the state that otherwise wouldn't have been able to see those projects realized. And so as a result, we call this our Connecting Arkansas program.
Also during the meeting in which the projects were announced, the Highway Commission awarded a contract for expanding Interstate 540 to six lanes between Weddington Drive and Porter Road in Fayetteville. In other money news, legislation introduced in the U.S. Senate Wednesday is expected to ensure Mayflower oil spill victims get tax relief. Senator Mark Pryor says the Mayflower Oil Spill Tax Relief Act of 2013 aims to protect affected residents by making sure compensation from ExxonMobil is not taxed by the federal government. In a conference call with reporters, Pryor said the legislation has specific goals.
The bill would exempt things like personal and family and living expenses as a result of the spill. It basically just help them on their taxes, and also if they have expenses for repair or rehabilitation for their residence or maybe a replacement, something like that, they would allow some tax treatment there.
Pryor worked on the bill with Arkansas's other senator, Senator John Bozeman. Both say the legislation would protect Mayflower families who receive compensation by classifying the contributions under current law as qualified disaster relief payments. Bozeman admits much still needs to be done at the federal and state levels to reimburse residents.
Everybody agrees that you know, there was so much damage, the oil company pays you that. What we don't want is then for people to have to pay taxes, on that amount that they got. So hopefully we'll get this done. It's very, very important. And it's the right thing to do.
Bozeman says he and Pryor will work with Senate leadership to gain final approval of the measure in a timely manner. And finally, for the third consecutive year, the University of Arkansas completed its fiscal year with more than $100 million in private giving support. The university announced Wednesday that it had recorded $108.4 million in private donations from July 2012 through June 30th. That total was above the university's fundraising goal of $107 million for the fiscal year. Mark Power is the university's assistant vice chancellor for development. He says that the amount of contributions brought in last year is the fourth highest total ever for the university. Power says that successful years of fundraising like the one just completed helped the U of A move toward its goal of being a top 50 research institution.
As we all know, private giving is very important to the overall growth of a university campus, and certainly here at the university we see that private giving will provide that margin of excellence. And so as we continue on our trajectory and continue to try to do as best as we can for our students and faculty and staff, this is something that will play a major role in that effort to become a top 50 in the years to come.
From the Harold and Blanche Calk News Studio, I'm Timothy Dennis, and this is Weekend Ozarks at Large.
Lots of things are made in our region, from the home crafter to chocolate makers to national manufacturing brands. We have a plethora of locally made items. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda visited a small shop in Springdale where a couple makes and sells their crafts for the first installment in our new locally made series.
You ready?
No.
No. I'll do it for you. That's fun, huh? Yeah, wind chime. Can you say wind chime? You should try.
On this warm July evening, Adam Cole raises up his 16-month-old daughter, Nora, to play with a wind chime hanging in his workshop, which is located in the middle of Springdale. The copper wind chime was created by his shopmate, Steve Gerecht, a fellow woodworker who has known Adam for about 15 years. As a fan hums on the floor and creates a small breeze through the shop, Adam's wife, Kara, stands nearby. Kara and Adam were both born and raised in Springdale and are celebrating their 11th wedding anniversary this year. The two were high school sweethearts who have recently transitioned to business partners as the owners of Noble Dwelling.
Well, high school sweethearts to marriage was not a hard decision. I think we were one of the more rare love at first sight stories. I mean, we knew right away, and parents thought we were crazy. I mean, you're 15, you don't know what you're doing. But I think for us, the business part just started us making gifts for friends and family and making things for our own home. And as more people saw what we were doing and saw our style and started asking us to make things and they would buy them, just kind of grew from there. And I think still every day we're a little bit shocked that people want to buy our stuff. It's like we make things because we like them and people continue to buy them. So here we are.
The Coles initially just worked out of their home, but outgrew that very quickly. To keep up with the demand for their goods, they moved into their current space about 4 months ago. In addition to custom orders, the couple creates handmade items that are available for purchase at Warehouse 54 Indie Market in Springdale and Four-Legged Bird in Fayetteville. The Springdale natives create handmade home goods that include anything from purses, satchels, and aprons sewn by Kara, to furniture, wooden six-pack carriers, and metal marquee-style letters and arrows created by Adam. Kara says it's difficult to explain their crafts. She says it's just them.
I know Keith at Four-Legged Bird. He loves to describe us as the soft and hard. I'm the softer side with the sewing and the bags and the more feminine products, and Adam is the hard side with the welding and the wood and metalworks. I guess that would be a good description for us. I think we love anything old and anything repurposed. So a lot of our things are a very old-time feel, a very classic feel. Very vintage, to use a coined word anymore.
Kara says the hard part about explaining their work is they are often all over the place. While they do have their staple items, Kara says they get bored pretty easily and they love a challenge. Many of their custom orders include people finding something they like a table online, and then asking the Coles to make it. Kara says they enjoy the challenge of making something similar, but adding their own flair to it. Although Kara sews, she says she can't read patterns, so oftentimes when she sees something on the internet she wants to make, she simply sketches it up and tries to create it. Kara says she often doesn't know what she's going to make from day to day.
I actually learned to sew probably about 6 years ago. I actually had cancer, and so I was, you know, in the home a lot and couldn't go anywhere, move around a lot, and so while I was doing chemo, my best friend, Janessa, said, hey, let's learn how to sew. This would be a fun thing to do. And so we didn't have anyone teach us or knew what we were doing. We just bought a sewing machine and said, let's try to make this. And so we did.
Another tough time in the couple's life has also been incorporated into their current business.
Our first son, his name was Noble Ray, and he actually passed away from SIDS. And so after that, we came back, and we actually moved to Haiti after that and did some restoration work there after the earthquake. And when we came home from that and had the opportunity to have a little bit more time to process life and think things through, and that's when a lot of our creativity started coming out. We started making a lot more things, and so we decided we needed a name for what we were doing. And we've always called our home our dwelling. Just a word that we've always used. We like to dwell in places, and so we just knew we wanted to use Noble's name as, you know, part of a legacy for him, and so Noble Dwelling came about, and here we are.
Adam and Kara made their debut last December at the Little Craft Show after some encouragement from their friend Amber Paradin of Paradin Supply Company.
We were so nervous, and we didn't think anyone would buy our stuff. Why would we do this? Why would we put all our stuff in a craft show? And we actually ended up selling out of 90% of our stuff in the first 20 minutes of the craft show. And so we were just totally, totally blown away. And that was what really kind of spurred us on, like, okay, maybe this is soon. Maybe we should really look into selling our stuff full time.
While they do have some signature items, Adam says he wants to expand what they create.
We're starting to get into a little bit bigger stuff, like the arrows and the marquee stuff, and then furniture is our next big push. We do a lot of smaller hand goods. At the Little Craft Show last year, we were there. We had a lot of smaller, more present type things, and then at Block Street Party, we brought some of the marquee letters, and those were huge. So we've kind of just tried to expand where we don't get in a rut, so we can stay creative with it, where it doesn't quite feel like a job.
If you've been to Maxine's Tap Room in Fayetteville since it reopened earlier this year, you may have noticed a large illuminated metal M hanging on the wall. This was created by Adam, who says he made it bigger than his typical letters because he wanted to pay tribute to the Maxine's tradition. Adam grew up with a father who liked to carve and tinker with wood, which is how Adam got into woodworking himself. Adam built houses with a Springdale company for years and is currently a shop foreman for Eclipse Displays in Fayetteville. He says Noble Dwelling is a creative outlet for him. Recently, his creativity led him to get into metalworking. Adam says they often scavenge for materials and rarely use new materials unless a client requests it. Adam says he likes that old Las Vegas look of metal letters with light bulbs. In addition to letters, he also has similarly styled arrows and a star hanging in his shop. Although he is new to metalworking, Adam says he finds it's more forgiving than wood because it's easier to fix your mistakes. The couple seems to be enjoying their success, but Adam says it can be overwhelming at times when they receive so many orders at once. Kara says she still doesn't expect the reaction she sometimes receives.
It's still a surprise every day that people are seeking out our stuff. I think that's what surprises me more is when someone says, I saw, you know, someone carrying your bag and I wanted to know if I could have one too. It surprises me every day because I make, kind of like Adam was saying, we make things that we like, and sometimes it still kind of surprises us that people want the things that we make and like our style and what we're doing.
Noble Dwelling will have a trunk show at Four-Legged Bird in Fayetteville September 13th. You can find out more about this local company by visiting facebook.com/Noble Dwelling. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
On Ozarks at Large, you often hear us talking to bands who have been together for years. But there are also musicians in the area who get together only temporarily for a couple of performances. One such group is Pianos and Drums. The trio was created by Fayetteville-based drummer Nate Wong, who recruited his friends Jonah Wehaus, who's based in Chicago, and Yaniv Tabenhaus, who's based in New York City. Recently, the trio stopped by the Furman Garner Performance Studio to speak with Of Note host Katie Hendrickson. All three musicians had gathered as a group for the first time the day before the interview. During their visit to the studio, they played a couple of songs, including this one, titled Neo Soul. Thank you.
That was Nate Wong, Jonah Wehaus, and Yaniv Tobenhaus, and together they are Pianos and Drums. The trio recently spoke with Katie Hendrickson, the host of Note on KUAF. Their conversation was inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. The trio performs one more time, 6:30 tonight at Smoke in Tulsa. More information is available at natewongmusic.com.
The 1993 film Jurassic Park, based on the book by Michael Crichton, is the 15th highest-grossing film in U.S. history, and it gets its plot from entomology, the study of insects. All genres of movies share certain things. There's a plot, a main character or two, supporting characters, a setting, a soundtrack, and insects. I invited our Ozarks at Large insect expert, Dr. Donald Steinkraus, entomologist at the University of Arkansas, to discuss the role insects play in films. As it turns out, they serve a different purpose in a variety of films.
There's different types of movies with bugs in them. So sometimes they're the main characters, like in Ants or the Bee Movie, and other times they're incidental and create an ambience or a feel, I think.
There are films that really play on people's phobias of bugs and portray them as disgusting and scary, a gross factor, like Arachnophobia, literally a movie about the fear of spiders. Steinkraus says that when he asked people about their insect experiences in film, many say Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
There are these scenes where they're in a sort of tunnel and there's these bugs everywhere. There's just, the whole tunnel is crawling with bugs.
Something on the
ground. Throw us different fortune cookies.
It's not fortune cookies. Let me take a look.
That's no cookies.
It's all right, I got it.
The actress in the film was so frightened by the insects that she had to take a tranquilizer before filming. Steinkraus says that she didn't have any reason to be frightened, that there isn't much accuracy with the insects.
The bugs they use are kissing cockroaches, which I raise and are totally harmless. They had a lot of giant walking sticks, which are remarkable creatures. They're very big insects, but they're also harmless. And then they had longhorn beetles, these cerambycids, which again are harmless. So they depict them as this really gruesome, scary scene, but actually all the bugs in it are perfectly harmless, and the actress didn't have to be scared of them at all.
He says they did have one possible toxic insect, giant centipede that can bite. If you look closely, you can tell that mannequins and such were used in the scenes with bugs crawling on humans. As an entomologist, he thinks the movie makers should contact one to make the gory films more realistic. But in animated films like A Bug's Life, A Bee Movie, or Ants, insects are portrayed as cute and humanized, something relatively new thanks to computer-generated graphics. Steinkraus does have one criticism of these flicks.
The hero of them is generally a male, like a male ant or a male bee. In the social insect world, the males almost never have any role to play. So like in the Bee Movie, they show a male and he's out gathering and doing things and working, but that's not actually the case for bees. And same with the ants, that's the main character is a male. They've humanized them so much that they can only think of characterizing the hero as a male. And actually, in those social insects, the females do all the work and are also the defenders of the colony.
He says he noticed that the animated films are often a parable for human society. The male main character is individualized, the black sheep of the group that doesn't want to be another number in the line of ants. Something Steinkraus connects to Western society. People just don't want to be cogs in the machine. Another type of movie that we see are the giant insect-type movies, typically from the 1950s. Playing on the fear of atomic bomb testing that occurred at that time. Like the movie Them, with gigantic mutated ants that run out of food and start eating people.
Nature, mad, rampant, wrought its most awesome creation. For born in that swirling inferno of radioactive dust were things so horrible, so terrifying, so hideous, there is no word to describe them.
We may be witnesses to a biblical prophecy come true.
Again, as an entomologist, Steinkraus says that that just isn't physically possible.
The biggest insects in the world right now are about, one of the biggest ones, the Hercules beetle. It's about the size of a fist. And then there's Atlas moths, which have about a foot-long wingspan, but their body is actually only about the size of your thumb. And so there's a limitation to the size that insects can actually get. Even if you radiated them, you could not come up with insects the size of a car that could live. They couldn't molt their exoskeleton and survive. Like, the gravity would pull their the new soft exoskeleton. It would flatten it and cause it to be distorted.
One of his favorite films is the drama Uli's Gold, in which Peter Fonda plays a beekeeper. His son is in prison for a robbery, and his daughter-in-law is too into drugs, so Uli is taking care of his grandchildren.
And one of the good things they did about this film was they actually hired an old, long-term beekeeping family down in Florida to consult with them and share their apiaries with them. And so this family produced Tupelo honey, which is a fantastic honey, and they, you know, advised them on the film. So it's very accurate in the beekeeping, and it's very, very dramatic. But the beekeeping part is really excellent, and it's very sympathetic towards beekeepers. So this one I really highly recommend anybody see if they can, as a movie to see, and also with accurate stuff about bees.
There are lots of movies about bees. Most are horror, like The Swarm, Swarmed, or Killer Bees. Their intent is to stir up hysteria. Again, Steinkraus says that these types of movies don't have much scientific truth. Another of his favorite films is Meet the Applegates, about a sort of human-slash-bug family.
Humans are damaging the Amazon, where this unknown group of bugs live, and they can sort of simulate being human. So they come up to the United States to try to stop humanity. They sort of want to get rid of humanity, but they take the guise of a normal middle class sort of suburban family.
Hey, Applegate Jane, age 38, occupation homemaker. I met my husband at Maryland University, where I majored in home economics.
I happened to find a pile of rancid trash.
Hunting for bargains, Jane?
Applegate Sally, born Baltimore 1971, Scorpio. I enjoy swimming, chicken McNuggets, and gymnastics. Kiss on the second date.
Whoa!
And so it's really quite hilarious. So most of it's set with them as these bugs and human guys, but they get terribly corrupted by our society.
The father starts having an affair. The mother starts shopping with a credit card. The son gets in with the wrong crowd. It tells the story of humans causing trouble for the bugs, both in the Amazon and society. Then there's the 1996 MTV movie Joe's Apartment, which accurately portrays cockroaches as liking Joe's dirty apartment. But these cockroaches sing.
Funky towel, towel's got the funk.
I suppose some cockroaches do make noise, like the hissing ones mentioned earlier. An iconic image from the early 1990s is the poster or cover for the film Silence of the Lambs. It's a girl, in black and white, whose mouth is covered by a colorful moth. In this thriller, a serial killer is placing a rare moth in the throat of his victims. In addition to spending time with an imprisoned killer, Detective Clarice Starling visits entomologists like Dr. Steinkraus to find out just what kind of moth it is.
Gotcha.
What do you got, Rudin?
Agent Starling, meet Mr. Acherontius Styx.
Weird.
Better known to his friends as the Death's Head Moth.
Yeah, where does it come from?
That's what's strange. They only live in Asia.
Asia?
In this country, they'd have to be specially raised from imported eggs.
Now, somebody grew this guy, fed him honey and nightshade, kept him warm. Somebody loved him.
Dr. Steinkraus confirms that this movie, too, is accurate.
And that is an actual moth. That's actually the Death's Head Hawk moth, which occurs in Europe. And it does have, like, on its thorax, it has scales which look like a death's head. It looks like a skull. And it actually has scared people for a long, long time because it's a very large hawk moth, and it squeaks. And it's got an interesting habit. It likes to sneak into beehives and sip their nectar. And when it does that, it goes in and it sort of smells like a honeybee, and it squeaks a little bit. And suppose that squeak helps the bees think it's maybe a queen. And he's able to get in there and steal their honey.
Stein Krause also commented on the portrayal of entomologists or bug collectors, or scientists in general, in films. Films such as the 1965, The Collector, as portraying them as nerds, something he would neither confirm nor deny. This is Ozarks at Large.
Here's an oxymoron for you, yarn bombing. The term refers to a relatively recent phenomenon, no more than 9 years old, that is the yarn equivalent of graffiti. Mysterious, often overnight, crochet projects turn up in unexpected places like public statues, trees, or buildings. The Eureka Springs-based Creative Energy Project is working on some yarn art, including the first ever outside of Eureka Springs work for the Creative Energy Project. On August 6th, the exhibit called Yarnography will be presented by the Norberta Philbrook Gallery at the Press Room on Central Avenue in downtown Bentonville. The artistic yarn and crochet images were dreamt up by Jeremy McGraw, a photographer and a major force behind the Creative Energy Project. The yarn creations themselves are the work of Gina Galina. Yesterday, Jeremy McGraw came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio to talk about yarnography and about the growing cool factor of working with yarn.
Now it's become an actual sort of edgy public folk art, you know, and it's exciting and it's colorful, and it allows people to transform, you know, public spaces into these vibrant, colorful installations.
And very safely.
Yeah.
I mean, unlike graffiti,
right?
It can be removed when it's time to remove it, and no sharp edges here.
I think something about yarn bombing as well, that it inspires awe because you look at it and you know that it took a lot of time, you know. Whereas graffiti, which I love graffiti as well, but there's a quirkiness to yarn bombing. And when you look at it, the bigger those installations are, you realize, like, oh my gosh, how much time did that take to do, you know? And the fact that it could be applied to a public space with nobody, you know, being aware that it was happening, to shows up one day, you know, and then you realize it must have taken hundreds of hours to weave these pieces together.
What are we going to see in Bentonville in early August?
Well, Yarnography is sort of a hybrid project. It is a photography project involving these sort of surreal crochet landscapes, and it's very conceptual. And so the end result of Yarnography is a collaboration between myself and the crocheter Gina Galina. We took some concepts that I had come up with, and I sort of described them to her in writing, and then she made the sets and props and costumes, and then we went back with a kind of a team of people and we shot these images. So it's really fun. It's very much inspired by the yarn bombing craze, but it's a conceptual photography project. It's also intended to be the beginning of a number of yarn bombing projects that we'll be orchestrating for the next year that will involve different public places and things like that. So we're really excited about it. It's kind of the starting point.
What are some of the landscapes, the images we'll see in Yarnography?
They're very character-driven, and I like to, when I come up with projects, I write a ridiculous backstory that nobody will ever
get. A narrative?
Yeah, nobody will ever get out of the things, but for me, it helps me to know where I'm coming from when I create these images, that they have maybe a subconscious cohesiveness to them, even if, you know, I'm not really intending for anybody to get out of it. So I came up with these different pieces that are all really about this kind of insane collection of people that have decided to solve the world's problems via crochet. They're crazy, but this is sort of their delusional vision of the solutions to problems as they see them. So each one depicts sort of a different character with their vision of how to fix the world.
Yarn can be bright. So as a subject for photography, mm-hmm. is it easy to work with?
Well, that's what's exciting about it, because there's a whimsicality to the images, because I very much wanted them to look like, you know, they were created by some shut-in that, you know, is just sitting there watching, you know, television and thinking, I've got to do something. And then they start crocheting a way to sort of, you know, fix this problem. I come from a theatrical background, and it was very much like these little, you know, designing these little sets very similar to a theatrical show. And so we come up with the character and then describe that to Gina, and she made the costumes and the props. And then, I light from a very theatrical standpoint. So it's a lot of fun because I'm using the same room in all the shots, but I'm sort of transforming them, but not in a way that eliminates the room. I kind of want it to be obvious that it is this little tiny room in an apartment.
Well, the press room is not a huge place.
Right.
So when people walk in, mm-hmm. those days in August, what will they see?
They're going to see a mixture of, we'll have six of the images that I shot that will be there mixed with some of Gina's original pieces. So there will be some giant flowers that will be sort of set up freestanding in a corner, in addition to two of her wall hangings that are these sort of they're crochet portrait, or not portraits, but they're sort of crocheted, you know, wall hanging pieces, like tapestries, I guess, but more kitschy than that. And then at the event, we'll have the characters, in addition to things like, we'll be selling like crocheted donuts and crocheted pieces of cake.
Yeah, I've seen a picture of the cake.
Yeah. So
that looks...
Well, we have little slices of
yeah,
the cake. We also
okay.
have little like miniature cakes and things like that. And those are actually pin cushions as well. And so it's just really, it immediately inspires fun. And people that haven't ever seen, yarn bombing styled stuff before, they usually greet it with an instant like smile like a kid. It just, you know, it gets that kind of reaction. And pulls something out of people that, you know.
How is it as a medium? I know that it's Gina who mm-hmm. who creates it, but is it a relatively inexpensive medium to work with?
It is. It's all about time. It's a, you know, it's an inexpensive medium, and really with yarn bombing, you're covering things, you know. So it's just
right.
whatever you want to cover. But I love the way that it just reinvents things and makes them interesting. You know, it makes them quirky or fun or, you know, whatever. But it's really just about, it takes a tremendous amount of time. Even somebody that's fast, we you know, in this project, we had people that were helping do some of the crocheting. So there were pieces of it that she could sort of assign to people and say, I need this many squares of this color. And then she could seam them together. On some of the big ones that we're looking at doing in the future, it's going to take a real crew of people. This thing in Bentonville is really our first creative energy project that's outside of Eureka Springs. So it's only 2 years old, and so it's exciting that we're kind of we're leaving the city on this one. So I'm excited to see what will happen.
Jeremy McGraw is with the Creative Energy Project, and he's also a photographer. He lives in Eureka Springs. The opening for Yarnography is at the Press Room in downtown Bentonville, August 6th, from 6 until 8 p.m. The opening will feature yarn props and characters. The photographs will remain up at the Press Room through the month of August. You can learn much more about Yarnography and the Creative Energy Project at the website creativeenergyproject.com.
This week on This American Life.
Okay, you had me pick up dandelions.
Yes.
Just to prove a point to me.
Okay. So you're still upset over the dandelion deal?
Yes, I really am.
An inmate and a prison guard tell each other how they really feel.
It wasn't hard. It was just
Did it take
point.
A lot of time?
No, it didn't take a lot of time. It's still the principle. You made me pick
up
dandelions.
Did you break any bones?
No, you can't.
How your perspective changes when you're stuck inside a situation. This week.
Flower that grows out.
That's
the
This American Life with Ira Glass, coming up this morning at 10 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
When I don't know what to do, and I don't know what to think, I say something cause it's fun to say. Rubber baby buggy bumpers. And it doesn't mean a thing, might sound a little strange, I just say it cause it's fun to say.
rubber baby buggy bumpers.
That's music from a new CD, Trout Fishing in America's Rubber Baby Buggy Bumpers. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
The reason we're hearing that music from Trout Fishing is because the biggest fan of Trout Fishing in America in the universe is Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. True?
Second biggest fan.
Oh.
My daughter.
Your daughter, yes.
Well, see, I know a couple of people that really like trout fishing also.
So. Amanda will tangle with them, the title of biggest fan. This is, as far as she's concerned, this is the Beatles, Elvis, and, the Who? Rolling Stones. And they know her name. What more can you want? They do have a wonderful new children's CD out, although the children's CDs are not just for kids,
right,
called Rubber Baby Buggy Bumpers. And if you'd like to practice tongue twisters from the CD, you can practice Benevolent Elephant, Red Leather, Yellow Leather, Pink Lorry, Yellow Lorry, or Three Gray Geese in the Green Grass Grays.
You're a better person than
I was going to try. Yeah. She sells seashells, but
not this early.
Apparently, they started out with the idea that the CD was going to be called Gross Exaggerations and went from there, which is why there are songs on it called Creepy Dead Bug. There are also wonderful songs called Like My Sister Kissed Her Boyfriend. It's like 50s, 60s pop with the concept that what could be grosser for a kid than seeing his sister kiss her boyfriend.
Right, ew.
Zydeco, Zoo Wacky Zoo, a song called It's Not Mud, a song called Boo. Emily Cates has a song.
And I noticed that there's a credit for the Leverett Singing Club. I imagine that's the group that Bernice
Hembring. I met them.
Yeah.
It is. And they do backup on Don't Touch My Stuff, which is, of course, a serious song about the van getting stolen and all their musical instruments and all their, they left the CDs. But the kids apparently love the song because they get the concept of Don't Touch My Stuff. They also sing back up on Emily's song, To Be a Would-Be. And there's a lovely song that's left over from the Chicken Joe album. Mm-hmm. It's called Meow, Meow, Meow. Because Keith has 11 cats and knows what each of them is saying.
Is this available now?
No, it is not. Unless you mug me on the way out of the station. It will be released on September 3rd, but you can see and hear Trout Fishing in America at 2 o'clock on Wednesday at the Fayetteville Public Library, at 5:30 on Thursday at First Thursday in Fayetteville, and at a local pre-release party at 10 o'clock on August 24th on the Frisco stage in downtown Rogers.
Fun.
Also this afternoon, a family program called Butterflies and Bugs. See how cleverly I could have led into that if I was awake? From 1 to 3 at Crystal Bridges in Bentonville, $20 per family. A Sunday concert with the Great Scots at 2 o'clock at the Fayetteville Public Library. And Clayton Conversations in Fort Smith with organic gardener John Bruce at 2 o'clock. $5 suggested donation, and you really should call ahead. 783-3000.
He's a fifth-generation Fort Smith resident.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
All right. Thank you, Becca.
Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Earlier this week, there was a royal birth.
Yes. Prince William and his wife, Kate,
yes,
had their first child.
Yes. And he will perhaps someday be king. He's in the lineage right now.
He's the third.
So it goes Queen Elizabeth, who is queen now, then Prince Charles, then William, and then...
So then the fourth. I've been hearing three.
Well, third in line behind the queen,
okay,
I think.
Yeah, okay.
I'm in over my head on this.
Yes.
But they named the youngster, the young prince, George Alexander Louis. And in honor of young George, we decided to make our Sunday montage Famous Georges.
But what about jungle, forest, stream, open range, where deer and antelope play?
Oh, all that has to go, of course.
I think I just heard a discouraging word.
Something must be done.
You say either, I say either, you say neither,
And I say neither, either, either, and either, neither, let's call the whole thing off.
He developed 300 products from peanuts, 118 products from sweet potatoes, and 60 products from pecans.
He said, I'll love you till I die. She told him, you'll forget in time. As the years went slowly by, she still preyed upon his mind.
The sea was angry that day, my friends. Like an old man trying to send back soup in a deli. I got about 50 feet out, and suddenly, the great beast appeared before me.
And after my opening song, I looked out in the audience, and I spotted Gracie sitting in the 10th row. This wasn't hard to do. She was the only one left.
If you'd like to see the 10 clips that we used in our famous George montage, you can go to OzarksAtLarge.com.
And this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Cabanal.
Cabanal?
Yes.
You say that with gusto.
Well, I was excited when I drove through this town. I went to Eureka Springs, well, Berryville, actually, for a story a couple of weeks ago, and found that just as there was a sign for Cabanal, and there was nothing there.
Is it between Eureka and Berryville?
Well, it was connecting 412 and Highway 62.
Okay.
On the way to Berryville on a little highway called Highway 21.
Right. I know Highway 21.
Yeah. So yeah. It's on Highway 21.
Cabanal.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. All right. The KUAF website giveaway is offering event passes to the Fayetteville Roots Festival August 23rd through 26th. One winner will receive 2 4-day passes, which include Friends of the Festival backstage concert, late night passes, plus the Roots Festival main stage. The drawing is Friday, August 16th during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. Registration and information available at KUAF.com.
Roots Festival is right around the corner.
Well, this is the last weekend of July,
yeah.
And August always seems to accelerate because so many things change. Mm-hmm. By the end of the next month, the college football season has started. School is back in at schools and universities, and the dynamic changes.
It does.
We're about to get into the dog days, though, mm-hmm. right before that happens.
Hot dragging.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, Weekend Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Antoinette Grajeda will be with you tomorrow at noon for a brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. Then she'll take some time off, and you and I will be together quite a bit next week.
Yep, we sure will. All right.
Thanks so much for listening.
Have a good Sunday.